On April 24th, during the SCA Expo in Houston, the Specialty Coffee Association and the Coffee Quality Institute announced that the Q-Grader certification will now be managed by the SCA. The news came through social media. That day, a joint Instagram post from SCA, CQI and SCA Korea went live, stating, "Coffee is more than a score. The Q is evolving," they wrote, saying the Q-Grader program would now be based on the coffee value assessment. What followed was a storm. We saw memes, stories, we saw article posts and blog entries, many from Q-Graders and Q-instructors, mostly expressing confusion and disbelief. Others welcomed the change or criticized the backlash as pathetic. And then came another announcement. The FNC in Colombia and the Brazilian Specialty Coffee Association had adopted the CVA. That's quite a sequence of events. Now that the initial storm has calmed down a bit, it feels like a good time to take a step back and do a bit of discourse analysis, to separate the sender from the receiver and to really listen to the different voices involved. Because if we don't do this, it's easy to slip into bashing, but we want to try and offer a more balanced take. Benjamin and I send each other voice messages back and forth to reflect on everything that's happened. We figured, why not turn this into a kind of old-school audio correspondence, like a letter exchange, to explore the topic in a bit more depth? This is our attempt to understand more about what's being called CVA Gate. Welcome to the Kaffeemacher podcast. I was on holiday in my beloved mountains on April 24th, enjoying that quiet moment between winter and spring. Winter had passed, but there was still a touch of snow on the ground, and those very first flowers were pushing their way through the dry, tired soil. It felt good to be there. I had decided to only check my social media every other day. April 24th was one of those days. And suddenly my feed was overflowing with news. Something big had happened. Everyone was reacting and emotions were running high. I took a screenshot and sent it to Benjamin. He already knew, of course, and I asked him, "There's a lot going on. How are you feeling?"
Well, Philip, to be honest, the news really hit me on a couple of levels, actually. Firstly, on a personal note, as someone who's been a Q-grader for both Arabica and Robusta for many years, I have so many positive memories tied to the program. I'm thinking of the shared calibration sessions, the incredible people I met in Europe, in America, in Latin America, in Africa. For me, that Q-grader certification was often a real door opener. It created this common ground, a shared language, and a level of credibility with other Qs worldwide. We all went through those 20 tough exams, and succeeding in that created kind of a bond. So to see this program essentially being taken over and to find out about it through social media, that felt personal. My first thought was, what incredible poor form of communicating. But beyond my own feelings, I immediately felt a deep sense of empathy for those even more deeply invested. The Q instructors, for example, many of whom have built their livelihoods around this program. And just like us regular Q graders, they weren't really brought into the conversation or involved in the decision-making process from what I can see. This for me fits into a larger picture. The SCA and CQA have articulated these grand objectives for why this takeover and integration is a good thing. But personally, I have to say, I find it really hard to take those statements as at face value. It's not just the communication fiasco surrounding this announcement, but also looking at some of their business practices, well, especially of the SCA, over the past few years, I have significant doubts about the whole thing.
Benjamin, I hear you. I used to be a Q grader for a few years myself, but Then I stopped doing the calibrations. So I'm part of this growing species of so-called lapsed Q graders. And yeah, the communication around all of this, it was really poor. You describe it as something that feels personal to you. And I think that resonates with a lot of people. People who worked hard to earn this certification, to join what felt like kind of an exclusive club. A club with a limited number of seats. Right now, there are around 10,000 Q graders worldwide. Every single one of them went through a tough process. And for many, it was a real personal learning journey. I see that. I reached out to a few Q instructors because I wanted to hear from them how this whole change is impacting their work. As you rightly pointed out, many of them rely on these courses for a big part of their income, and they weren't warned. It's like you're a freelancer and your biggest client suddenly says, "Thanks, we are done." Andy Prosser is one of those Q instructors, and here's what he told us.
So yes, I am a Q instructor, and it looks like I won't be continuing any Q courses because numbers have dropped and people have pulled out because they're unsure about the next step. So even my calibration in early September, which was almost full, is looking most likely that that will get cancelled. Most people now are considering crossing over to the two-day CVA course as an option. So what's been said now is that if you take the two-day CVA cupping course, that will, by the end of the year, you will then be qualified as a evolved Q grader in the new program. So I will no longer run any courses this year. The only option I might try to put together is for those people who are needing to do retakes. So that's another consideration. But that's it for me with CQI.
We also hear from Emma Haynes. She's not a Q instructor, but she's an SEA trainer across all coffee disciplines. And she says she completely understands what we've seen in the industry. She hopes that once the dust settles, we'll be able to look at all of this with a bit more distance and maybe start to see a more positive picture emerge.
I would say that I think perhaps the way that it has been undertaken has surprised some people. And I do understand why those that are, you know, former CQI certificate holders or, you know, trainers for the CQI system have been left feeling quite upset. I think I can understand, you know, people's position on that. However, I really do hope that once the dust settles, we can kind of move towards a more positive outlook for everybody.
We hear from Michael Sheridan, the CEO of the CQI, and he apologizes.
If I'm sad about anything, it's really the sense of hurt that people in the CQI community have felt about the way this agreement came to pass with little warning and no consultation. And obviously, it's sad to know that you've hurt people who you respect and care about. And of course, I think it's natural to feel sad on a personal level about not being directly involved with the Q community in the same way we've been over the last 20 years, because it's really an amazing group of people. For me, the community of Q instructors may be the most accomplished group of coffee professionals in the world. And I sort of think of them as coffee Jedis. And my hope is that they'll become CVA instructors and train young coffee Padawans in this new standard, but also be able to draw on the old teachings and the old traditions in ways that lead to insight and true mastery. They just have so much to offer future generations of coffee leaders.
I have followed his work since his time at Catholic Relief Services, when he used to write about his experiences in the coffee lands. If you haven't read any of that, do it. It's worth your time. He's apologizing on behalf of CQI, and I find it really interesting and honestly not surprising. It's CQI that puts its members in front of a decision that has been made. But here's the thing. The CVA was also communicated by the SEA. And from that side, I haven't heard much in the way of moderation or humility. What I've heard is, we are moving forward. This is the big change. This is the future. In that sense, it feels like CQI was left a bit with its back against the wall. They had to apologize. And that's exactly where I would have expected a clear and honest positioning from the SCA as well. Something like, hey, We're in this together with CQI. This is a joint decision. That's what was missing. And to me, it also fits into a broader picture. Too busy to do damage control. The strategy seems to be move ahead, keep sharing the good news. Like, for example, the announcement that the FNC has adopted the coffee value assessment.
And talking about the implementation or the transition that just happened, it was a very dramatic time for all the Q graders, Q instructors. Everyone was waiting for the news. Everyone was uncertain. Everyone was terrified. We didn't know what's going on, what's happening, what the future will be. And it was unnecessary stress, I believe. And it made me feel like we're kids in front of the parents who are getting divorced. And we don't know what's going on. We know that there's something terrible going on, that there's some drama. And eventually we've been facing the outcomes of the negotiations, about the outcomes of the mediations and the final results. And some of us are sticking to mom. Some of us are sticking to dad. You know, one thing that we should all do as kids of the parents who are getting divorced, we should mature much quicker. You know, we should take the things in our hands and get the right perspective. And we should make the good decisions. And good decisions in the field that we're working in should be rooted in science, not opinions. So we should look at the current state of science, what the science is telling us about the sensory assessment, and we should make those decisions based on the science, not the opinions.
I find Philip Bartilak's image quite fitting, though there's a subtle difference. In divorces, children are always victims and they suffer. In the case of a takeover of a cupping system, which was primarily built by many local coffee professionals, that wouldn't necessarily have had to be the case. But for now, let's switch gears and talk about the actual idea behind the score sheet. What's the fundamental concept and how was it and how is it used nowadays?
As a trainer, an SCA trainer and somebody that taught the old 2004 system and is also now embarking on teaching the new CVA system, I think overall my experiences have been, I would say, fairly mixed. But I think I would have to say most students I have worked with have been very positive overall. They are students, it's important to note, that come from varying parts of the industry, some from producing countries, some from roasteries, and some from QC roles within roasteries, so some buying and some QC. But I have found that once people understand it fully, they actually really lean towards it.
Okay, so when we talk about a score sheet in coffee, particularly the one that's been the industry standard for roughly two decades, the Q system cupping form, or the SCR cupping form from 2004, which is the backbone of the Q grader system. Its primary purpose was to create a standardized language and a quantifiable measure of coffee quality. The core idea was to evaluate green coffee under hyper-standardized conditions, a specific roast level, precise brewing practices, and consistent tasting protocol. Q graders were trained and regularly calibrated to ensure that a score, say an 85 from a Q grader in Bali, would mean approximately the same thing as an 85 from us or from a Q grader from Nicaragua. Well, that was the aim. This system aimed to assess various attributes like aroma, flavor, aftertaste, acidity, body, balance, and sweetness, assigning points to each. The sum of these points resulted in a final score out of 100, with 80 points being the threshold for a coffee to be considered specialty grade. This score became a crucial tool for green coffee buyers and importers in their purchasing decisions, essentially a measure of the coffee's potential quality and a basis for price negotiation. It was about creating a common, objective as possible language for quality that professionals could trust and rely on. Now, when we start comparing this to the new coffee value assessment, we see a fundamental shift in philosophy. While the old system combined various assessments into that single all-important score, the CVA aims for a more high-resolution picture by breaking the evaluation into distinct parts.
You're right, we're looking at a high-resolution picture here, something designed to capture a lot of information. And that's the underlying idea behind the subtitle, Coffee is More Than a Score. So we collect impressions, ideas and evaluations across five different pages. First, the descriptive form. Here we rate fragrance and aroma, fragrance being the smell of the dry grounds and the aroma being what we perceive from the crust during cupping. We also score flavor and aftertaste, all on a scale from 0 to 15. And just like in aroma and flavor, we use gatta. Check all that apply boxes to describe the coffee in broader categories, such as fruity or floral or nutty, and not hyper-specific things like burnt green apple, which can be very, very subjective. The descriptive form also includes acidity, sweetness and mouthfeel, but interesting, leaves out bitterness, which is kind of ironic, right? It's such an essential part of coffee. Often the first thing regular drinkers will notice. And next up is the affective form. This one's about your personal impressions. The more notes I give, the better, the more colorful the picture of the coffee becomes. And then we have the physical assessment, pretty similar to what we already know from green grading, and the extrinsic form, which gathers everything that doesn't directly impact the sensory score. Finally, the combined form where all the data comes together. So, I've gone through the whole process with just one coffee under these new requirements. Was I efficient? Not really. It's a lot of paperwork. Was it effective? I've been using the old score sheet for years. I've gotten used to the fact that it's, well, incomplete. It gives you a blunt number and not much else. But I also learned to read between the lines, to put that number in context. With the CVA, it seems like the system is trying to do that job for me. Or is it?
I really do hope that once the dust settles, we can kind of move towards a more positive outlook for everybody. I think that actually, as an individual, as a cupper, the CVA form, once you are used to it, is actually much easier to use. I find that students and those using it are kind of less fatigued. When they're using it, they're more switched on, they're more engaged. They don't find it quite as overwhelming as the 2004 form.
You know, I think the idea behind it is clear. And I genuinely appreciate the impulse. The new CVA form is supposed to reflect coffee more holistically, to show its value far beyond a mere score by including extrinsic information and so on. Well, I think that is one of the ambitions. But the big question for me is, can it actually achieve it? I have three critical points regarding the form itself coming from different angles. First, that holistic approach. It's crucial for us that there's transparency about what happens along the coffee chain. Well, for us, it's crucial. But true transparency goes much, much further than what the CVA currently proposes in its extrinsic assessment. We are talking about soil health, CO2 footprint, actual farm gate prices, how pickers are paid, how pensions to farmers work and are secured, and so much more. The form doesn't intend to cover all these aspects, and perhaps it couldn't, but what it does offer in terms of extrinsic data, things like identity, origin, producer, info processing certifications, honestly remains surprisingly superficial. It doesn't deliver what's needed to create a tool that could generally contribute to a shift in how we view and practice the coffee trade. You know what I think? this entire extrinsic section is just a smokescreen. And that's where I also have my credibility questions and issues with the SCA. I think this part is meant to suggest we are taking a more holistic look at coffee. In reality, though, the SCA doesn't even address the global coffee crisis we are all caught up in. Instead, they stay in this shiny bling bling world of expositions. A more technical perspective, my second criticism with the form. But maybe we ask first Philip Bartelak, who has some valuable insight on this.
Why is the CBA the better score sheet? What is the sensory score sheet or score sheet in general? It's a tool, right? It's a vehicle that is supposed to drive the rider. And you can have a better or worse tools. But if you can't drive, you will never be able to drive. Any tool can be good, and any tool can be used for different purposes. So, yeah, the CBA is just another vehicle which is supposed to drive us from point A to B. And it will depend on the driver and its expertise. I've seen some wonderfully used old forms by professional cuppers, and their usage of the form was making a lot of sense. It was helping them to understand the coffee, to examine the pre-shipment samples and then compare them with the arrival samples. It was working very good, and I believe that these guys will do the same good with the new form. But I also seen some terrible forms filled in dramatically in chaotic way.
Building on that, I also want to say something about the content and usability of the form. Philip, would you seriously consider using the form in your daily practice for any specific tasks? If so, where and for what purpose? Because this form, as it stands, what is it actually suitable for? Personally, I wouldn't use it. And I think Martin Münchow from Coffee Mind hit the nail on the head when he said, and I'm paraphrasing from his webinar, that a key principle in food sensory science and also scientific practice is form follows function. I generally cannot see what function this form is seriously intended to serve in a practical day-to-day context. It feels so far removed from real-world applications that I pity any cupper who now has to generally use and try and cup with it. I believe it will lead to a significant blurring of the lines between effective and descriptive evaluation. Even though the CVA aims to separate these, it's incredibly difficult for the human mind to maintain that strict internal differentiation when you're trying to navigate such a complex tool. You're trying to objectively describe an attribute intensity on a 15-point scale and pick from extensive catalysts for that descriptive part, while simultaneously trying to suppress your immediate like or dislike, which is then supposed to be captured on a separated 9-point hedonic scale for the effective part. The entire score sheet, especially the descriptive variant, is just completely overloaded.
There's a lot to unpack here, my friend. First, the smokescreen you mentioned. We're facing real pressing challenges in coffee businesses around the world, and yet the SCA has remained mostly silent. On the few occasions where they have addressed these challenges, well, let's just say it's been completely dwarfed by the time and effort poured into promoting the CVA. And Mukhtar Al-Khanshali raised a really valid question. What problem are we trying to solve here? Was the old score sheet broken? He reflects on his own journey with it in a thoughtful blog post on his website. And then you, Benjamin, brought up something really important. That tension between being objective and being subjective. You're right, asking the same person to do both is kind of impossible, because subjectivity has always been part of any evaluation. What's different now is that the CVA tries to separate those two types of scoring. Philip Bardelak pointed that out too. He told me there's a lot of science behind the new system, that it's based on dozens of studies. And then we've got Morten Munkhoff, who's voiced some serious reservations about it. This could get interesting when the scientists themselves start to disagree. Because let's be honest, that fight is probably coming. But in practical terms, well, everyone's going to have to get used to it. Some will dive in from the start, most of us will adapt in one way or another. Emma Haynes, an SCA trainer, she offers a very pragmatic take. And honestly, that might be the healthiest way to handle it right now. And Benjamin, you ask me, would I cut using the new forms? No, I would not. And not out of protest, but simply because I've gotten used to the old one. I've become efficient with it. It helps me make sense of a coffee, its flavor, its context. But let's zoom out for a moment. Let's talk about the value of giving value to coffee. Who does it help? Who profits from it? Who doesn't? Costa Kalifrusis has been thinking about this for a while. A few years ago, he was guest on the Key to the Shop podcast and talked about something he called the tyranny of taste. Let's hear what he had to say.
The original, like, 2004 form was developed as a response to attempting to, one, help coffee producers identify the types of coffees that small to medium-sized roasters were looking for. And then on the other end, you know, was helping, like, roasters identify, like, what makes a specialty coffee and what doesn't make a specialty coffee. Especially with the end of the ICA in 1989, like, there was a flood of coffee on the market, and with it came a flood of new actors, mostly small to medium-sized players. And producers needed more money, roasters needed more coffee.
You know, Philip, tyranny of taste, that is a strong description from Kostas, but I can absolutely see where he's coming from. When I think back to some cuppings I've attended at Origin with producers present, that phrase really comes to life. The tension in the room is immense when cuppers are evaluating coffee and not just looking for a purchase decision, but potentially a price-defining one, hangs in the balance. The imbalance is particularly acute when the producers themselves aren't trained cuppers, which is the reality for most of the smallholder producers around the world. They are essentially waiting for a verdict from the queues or other buyers, and they have very little leverage to do anything but accept what's said.
So from what I understand, the form was, you know, helping to address a problem of producers who were dealing with, like, a significant decline in what they were earning. I think the market in within 2 years ended up collapsing by 50%. And the small to medium-sized players had issues, you know, identifying or finding, like, good specialty coffees. And so here comes SCA, here comes COE, and here comes the Q system in order to go ahead and, like, develop, promote, and support these kinds of projects. And I have to say, you know, if we are looking now at, gosh, what has it been, you know, 30 plus years, I think we can successfully say that, like, there's no issue for roasters finding the coffees that they need. Most roasters can buy just about any coffee they want, any price, anywhere, anytime, within reason.
That brings me back to a fundamental question, which is, what is such a system for? Why does it exist? And in what direction is it pointing us? Kostas raises this very question too. He says something along the lines of, we don't have a problem with the right coffee finding the right buyers, which then leads to his point on value distribution.
You know, and to SCA's credit, they ended up putting out a report, I believe it was last year or the year before, talking about value distribution. And in the report said that there's enough value being generated. The issue is the redistribution of that value. You know, that's a real problem right now that needs to be addressed for coffee producers. And this is where I just don't understand what the CVA is trying to solve. You know, I've heard that like it's about addressing information asymmetry, but without any type of regulatory reform, like having more information really doesn't do anything for you.
Let's zoom out even further and ask a fundamental question. Why is there a new score sheet at all? And why did the SCA take it over from CQI? Now, as for the score sheet itself, sure, the world of coffee is in motion. We're learning more every day. We have research, data, science. New findings can and should be implemented and debated. This system will evolve. At least, we hope it will. Personally, I see the CVA as a kind of platform, something that should grow and develop with its users. If that happens, if it remains open, then it could become meaningful to some. Others, though, they might never find peace with the new format, and that's okay too. They'll continue to cup coffee, do their work, and move forward without adapting the CVA. Or as Philippe Bardelac put it, a score sheet is just a tool. It's only as good as the cupper using it. But let's go deeper. Why did the SCA take over the Q-Grader system from the CQI? Here, things get a bit murkier. We've heard rumors at start. There was even speculation that CQI had been pressured or blackmailed. Those rumors were later cleared up. But still, as far as I understand it, there's been no official explanation for why the SCA assumed control. So we reached out to Michael Sheridan, CEO of the CQI. And here's what he told us.
The closure of USAID was a very important factor in our decision to pursue an agreement with SCA. USAID wasn't just the largest source of public funding for international development, but it was also the largest donor in CQI history. And given that we never really succeeded in creating robust private markets for the Q in coffee-producing countries, funding from USAID was essential for CQI to advance its mission. Its closure creates real uncertainty about the future of official U.S. support for international development, and it comes against a backdrop of donors in Western Europe being concerned for obvious reasons about collective security and not in an especially good position to fill the gap created by USAID's closure. In this context, SCA's commitment to step up and provide long-term financing for our development work was an important factor in our decision. We were motivated to come to agreement with the SCA because of big changes that we believe would really affect our ability to deliver the Q through both of those channels. One of those was the SCA's launch of a CVA-based program for training cuppers, and the other was the closure of USAID.
That's the CQI's point of view. From the SCA side, we still don't really know. When I shared a post on LinkedIn, which got a fair bit of traction, people in the comments kept asking, why? What exactly happened? Peter Giuliano, Chief Research Officer at the SCA and Executive Director of the Coffee Science Foundation, jumped into the discussion quickly. He responded to many comments and critiques. He spoke of a more holistic way to evaluate coffee, the separation of objective and subjective judgment, the promotion of fairness and inclusivity, the scientific foundation of the new system, and the need to adapt to modern market demands. And look, I don't doubt any of that. I might have my opinions, but those are facts, and facts don't change just because I feel differently. Still, this whole thing wasn't just a technical change. It wasn't just a platform switch. It was, in many ways, a shift in culture from one world, the Q world, to another. And for everyone involved in that Q world, and for everyone watching from the outside, I guess we deserve to know what exactly was the reason behind this takeover.
Okay, Philip, I have a very clear view on that. And this is a perspective that has grown
over the last few years, really building on an observation I've had since the merger of the Specialty Coffee Association of Europe and the Special Coffee Association of America. The SCA, the Specialty Coffee Association, today is progressively building larger power monopolies, centralizing formerly decentralized mechanisms, and has long since become a global coffee mega player. Power monopolies and a well-oiled machine of world coffee expos, sponsorship money from championships, and an inflated Specialty Coffee Association coffee diploma. These are all lucrative businesses that grow year after year. The SCA has become a massive business, and the salaries of its leadership are growing merrily along with it, just like a typical corporation. And I find that highly problematic. On one hand, the SCA puts on a good face, claiming to be a community-driven organization that relies on volunteers and thrives on honorary engagement, without the commitment of tens of thousands of helpers who believe the narrative of a purpose-driven organization, many of their events wouldn't even be possible. On the other hand, there's that harsh corporate reality that wouldn't dream of financing travel costs or accommodation for jurors, judges, or local helpers. From the SCA's business perspective, the takeover of the Q-Grader program seems logical to me. The takeover of the Q program should be the final wake-up call for everyone to build new independent structures separate from the SCA that function from the bottom up. The SCA's power position has clearly gone to its head. They don't even try to pretend anymore that they are involving local communities.
In that LinkedIn post I mentioned earlier, a number of Q instructors joined the discussion, many of them expressing that they felt sidelined. And then we began to hear about alternatives, ways to continue cupping the old way, to stay calibrated outside of the evolved Q system. There's the Sustainable Coffee Institute, led by Q instructor Tim Heinze, offering a different pathway for grading and calibration. There's also Willem Boot, who proposed the creation of a coffee taster's guild. These aren't just random ideas. They reflect a broader sentiment, a mix of frustration with the evolved Q, disapproval of the SCA's leadership role, and maybe even resistance to the new score sheet. But when I hear people say that the skepticism towards the CVA is just nostalgia or backward thinking, I think that's missing the point. Because from what I understand, many experienced cuppers aren't rejecting the CVA itself. They are reacting to the political maneuvering around it. The SCA frames all of this as progress, as research-driven, as forward-thinking. They are casting themselves as champions of innovation. The CQI, meanwhile, has been backed into a corner, forced to make a hard, clean break. And now, Q-graders everywhere face a decision. Not just which system to use, but what it feels like to belong to a new culture. Because this moment, it's a turning point. A cut, a deep one through a community that the SCA has long tried to brand as a united front. There are some now looking for alternative paths and taking them. I hear from producers who say they'll just adapt, quietly and most of all, pragmatically. But I also hear from importers who say, we already have our own score sheets, we're not changing anything. So no, the new CVA it doesn't look like a warm, unifying gesture. If anything, it feels more like a fracture in a sector that's already tense and too often misunderstood from the outside. And what we really needed in this moment were some softer words. We've tried here to unravel the Q-Grader story, to listen to different voices and to put them into perspective. From a little distance here in Switzerland, a bit of time, a bit of space, dust has been kicked up. And yes, it's beginning to settle, but the cleanup isn't done. If the SCA could find it within themselves to step outside of the road shadow and to truly listen, some wounds could begin to heal. We'll see. And we catch each other next time. Talk soon.